for fine music. And now, FM stands for fun music too. This is the Valley's Fun Music 105.7.
CFW Chippewa Valley.
This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
A recent healthcare study found that using ChatGPT's artificial intelligence to answer consumer health questions resulted in nearly identical answers as those from human physicians.
You're not a harried, busy physician trying to like squeeze out an answer to your question between six other patients. So they give very long format, clear, appropriate answers to things. And I think people see that and they're like, hey, I like that.
Then, those who pay high rents in today's economy are forced to make trade-offs in other areas, which can lead to social ills.
We saw some people making cutbacks for 5+ years. So those are most likely to be among people who are paying 30, 40, 50, 60% of their income as rent.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's show. Stay with us. InfoTrack begins right after this.
This new Wendy's Frosty flavor is way too exciting to keep under wraps. It's a brand new, first-of-its-kind flavor. Get this, pumpkin spice. I know, right? It's so good. It's rich, it's cozy. It's the perfect flavor for some fall frosty time. Watch, everyone will see it and jump on the bandwagon. Grab a never-before-seen pumpkin spice frosty or pumpkin spice frosty cream cold brew today when you choose wisely. Choose Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's. Vanilla Frosty is temporarily unavailable.
Jim Gaffigan here with some more straight talk. Now you can get a Walmart Plus membership, plus not pay for it, because it's included with Straight Talk wireless plans. You get free delivery with Walmart Plus, plus a Paramount Plus subscription included. Plus, you pay less for gas. That's a lot of pluses.
Only Straight Talk gives you unlimited 5G data and Walmart Plus included on select plans for free.
Straight Talk Wireless, available at Walmart.
Requires service on Gold or Platinum Unlimited. One offer per eligible account. Paramount Plus Essential Plan only. Separate registration required. Additional terms apply.
Hey, have you ever been ripped off? It sucks. Having a daily reminder of it is even worse. If you shave with a well-known Big Razor brand every morning, you might be thinking more about how much you paid for the blades than about how smooth your shave is. I'm Andy, the founder of Harry's. We give you a high-quality shave and an expertly engineered product for a fraction of the price that the big guys charge, with no compromises. They have five blades, Harry's has five blades. They have a lubricating strip, Harry's has a lubricating strip for extra glide. They have a trimmer blade, Harry's has a trimmer blade for the hard-to-reach areas. They charge up to $4 per blade. Our German-engineered blades cost as little as $2. Big brands charge higher prices because they can. Harry's keeps you in mind, focusing on high quality at a fair price. So stop rinsing cash down the drain every morning. Get a great shave for a fraction of the price with Harry's. Get a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/routine. That's harrys.com/routine.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Can artificial intelligence, specifically ChatGPT, replace your medical doctor's advice? A recent comparison had surprising results. With more, here's InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thanks, Chris. Our guest is Devin Mann, MD, professor in the Departments of Medicine and Population Health at NYU's Grossman School of Medicine. Doctor, your study examined how well the artificial intelligence chatbot ChatGPT was able to answer health-related questions compared to human healthcare providers. Let's get right to the results. How well did it do?
The short answer is really well. Remarkably similar to what humans would do for a lot of the questions that we pulled from live medical questions. So maybe taking a step back, we did a research study where we took questions that we had received from patients. We gave them to ChatGPT and looked at the answers it would give versus the answers that our actual physician gave. And we gave it to several hundred raters, to regular people out in the world, to see what they thought. And they felt that the answers were pretty darn good, particularly for the lower complexity, lower severity questions. As things got sort of more medically complex, higher stakes, they started to feel like they were less comfortable with the ChatGPT answers.
Yeah, can you give us an example of the ones that ChatGPT perhaps struggled with a little bit more?
Yeah, the things that people are asking, diagnostic questions. So like, what does this lab result really mean for me? And what would be my prognosis from that? That's the kind of thing that someone's not ready, and nor should they be, because I'm not sure that the answers are that reliable either. But that's the kind of thing that people feel less comfortable with versus sort of, hey, I have high cholesterol. What does that mean? You know, as ChatGPT can give a pretty comprehensive answer that is in the kind of language and style that both physicians use, but is very approachable, people like those answers. And so that gives you a sense of the spectrum of what people are in this day and age feel very comfortable, it seems, based on our research, getting those answers, knowing that it can be from a ChatGPT-generated tool.
A CNN study claimed that diagnostic errors are linked to nearly 800,000 deaths and cases of permanent disability each year in the U.S., and another report from Johns Hopkins University estimated that more than 250,000 Americans die every year due to medical mistakes, making it the third leading cause of death. How do you think the use of AI might impact misdiagnoses and medical errors?
Reports like that have been coming out for a long time. We know that the system still makes more errors than it should. And that's a combination of human error, but also systems that are not yet set up to really remove all those errors. So AI in general has a role. It can automatically do things, automate tasks that are not complex, but error prone. So things like reading a serial number on a medication and looking over here and then having to transcribe it or put it in another part of the computer. These are tasks that we already know that AI and other kind of automated tools can really improve quality and reduce safety events. And there's lots of folks focused on that. Beyond that, diagnostic errors, you're seeing reports, and I've read them too, where the people are showing an anecdote where, hey, my child had these like mystery symptoms for years and no one could figure it out. I plop them into generative AI tools, so ChatGPT type tools, and they come up with a diagnosis. And I brought back to my doctor, a different doctor maybe this time, and they're like, wow, that's a great idea. Let me look into that. And boom, they find the diagnosis, the mystery illness, right? Those are real stories from the headlines, but I think they do reflect a future where the reality is there are limits to, you know, what humans can do and the amount of data we can leverage. And so having tools like this to, at least in the short term, generate ideas, help expand the realm of what's possible, that what people are thinking of, and then having a human review after that to really be like, oh yeah, you know, this is valuable, or this is something we hadn't pursued. I see that being valuable in the coming time period, particularly for like diagnostics and things like that on the more complex side. On that more simple side, like we talked about, they're already, and we'll see more of these automated tools, very simple things that are very straightforward, that just humans are not robots. We are not computers. We make those kinds of mistakes. That's tools where we know AI has value. We're just trying to figure out the best way of finding those sort of use cases, as we would say, and deploying the tools in a really well done manner.
So you would say this is probably the tip of the iceberg?
I think so. I mean, people debate about, oh, is that iceberg eventually like replacing physicians and things like that? I don't see that future. I can't say I know for sure, but knowing that there's more value than what we have today, that's very hard to deny. It has real strengths. It not only leverages the strengths of computers, which don't make the same kind of mistakes that humans make, but generative AI in particular, these large language models like ChatGPT, they also have access to such a wealth of a really human writing and text and all these things, and they can bring that to bear on lots of steps in healthcare, and that's valuable. And so I think that is the tip of the iceberg. We're here at NYU, we're experimenting already. We have lots of folks working on these kinds of things, thinking about where does this make sense? Where in the experience of healthcare as a patient and as a clinician does this really add value? And in fact, we had this event called the Healthcare Promptathon, where we got just under 100 different users across the health system. And by users, I mean physicians, nurses, occupational therapists, social workers, all sorts of researchers. And we got everyone on the same page about what the tools like ChatGPT can do, these generative AI tools. And then we had them take it to their sort of domain, their research or their clinical work or their educational work, and say, you know, let's start to think about what this can do tomorrow. Because the reality is, it is the tip of the iceberg, you're right. And that's because, you know, we haven't really even spent time yet thinking about all the ways we can apply it. And that's where we are now, saying, cool technology, world of possibility. Now let's start getting real. Where are we going to use this? Where does it really make things better? Where is it just sort of cool?
You alluded to this a moment ago, but does this give you any concerns that healthcare consumers will make ChatGPT their first stop for, let's face it, free medical advice, and kind of make conventional medical expertise perhaps not a last resort, but not necessarily the first choice either?
I can say with confidence I have literally no concern about that from experience. My experience is that, you know, it was not that different than the Google Doctor we've talked about for 20 years. I definitely think people will use it as their first stop, and I don't discourage it. I mean, getting yourself educated is wonderful. The reality is it is hard to feel confident and to discern the different types of information that you're getting and really put together a sophisticated understanding of what's going on for your health. So for simple things, sure, and that's appropriate, I think. But as things get more complex, as they get sort of longitudinal, meaning like over time, and, you know, it's a lot to take on yourself. It's a lot of work fundamentally. And I think people will still want to, and I've seen that, they really do want the expertise, but they want that expertise to then weigh in on what they've learned. So in the past 20 years, it's been like, you know, hey, I read this on Google. What does this mean? It'll be very similar, I think. You know, the generative AI tool helped me understand this or raise these questions for me, now help me on the next step of that journey. I think we're going to see a lot of that in the coming period of time. But in terms of sort of displacing the use of healthcare, I don't foresee that anytime soon.
So what is the takeaway message from your study?
The technology moves fast. I think really what I've taken the study to mean to me is the level of comfort people have and that they're not walking into this saying, I refuse to listen to this technology. It suggests to me that there's a real interest in people getting high quality answers. A lot of people are saying that what the AI tools do is they give very empathetic answers because they can be directed to do so. And so they're not time pressed, right? They're not a harried, busy physician trying to like squeeze out an answer to your question between six other patients. So they give very long format, clear, appropriate answers to things. And I think people see that and they're like, hey, I like that. And even though they may have concerns about privacy and technology replacing humans, they also really are drawn to the potential advantages of these tools. People are interested. The data shows that they are not just tuning it out. They're there, they're listening. And they think for certain types of questions in our study, they find the reasonable answers. And I think it's because there are advantages and we need to be aware of them as we study this technology and try to figure out how to use it.
Fascinating topic. Dr. Devin Mann from NYU Grossman School of Medicine, thank you very much for joining us today.
No problem. Have a good one.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
Next, paying high rent can have long-term consequences. That story coming up.
Stick around. There's more InfoTrack straight ahead.
This new Wendy's Frosty flavor is way too exciting to keep under wraps. It's a brand new, first-of-its-kind flavor. Get this. Pumpkin spice. I know, right? It's so good. It's rich. It's cozy. It's the perfect flavor for some fall frosty time. Watch, everyone will see it and jump on the bandwagon. Grab a never-before-seen pumpkin spice frosty or pumpkin spice frosty cream cold brew today when you choose wisely. Choose Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's. Vanilla frosty is temporarily unavailable.
What's for dinner? Burgers?
After last week? No thanks.
Avoiding foods due to fear of diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools? It may not be just stomach issues. It could be EPI, or exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. EPI can cause uncomfortable symptoms because it's a condition where the pancreas doesn't release enough digestive enzymes to break down food. But EPI can be managed. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor about your symptoms. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code ENERGY at checkout. That's harrys.com, code ENERGY. Enjoy.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
A recent study suggests that a lack of affordable housing can result in a cascading effect on renters, And here to discuss this is Gary Painter, a professor of real estate at the University of Cincinnati. He is the academic director of the real estate program at the University of Cincinnati's Carl H. Linder College of Business and professor of real estate and the inaugural holder of the Bear Chair in Real Estate. Professor, when housing isn't affordable, your research suggests that people are forced to make trade-offs. Can you specify what types of trade-offs they might make?
Those trade-offs are actually in kind of two buckets, if you will. The first just has to do with the fact if I don't have enough money to make my bills this month, then you're going to cut back somewhere else. So you might cut back on food purchases. You might cut back on healthcare. You know, lots of possibilities. I won't buy new clothes or something for my kids, etc. And so we observe that, and we have known for a while in research that households manage their budgets when they're under these severe constraints in order just to make the monthly bills. But the second set of shifts in consumption or lifestyle choices perhaps have longer term implications. And that's what we called in the study a functional adjustment. So for instance, you either took on a second job or perhaps added hours to your current job. So you're working not 40 hours a week anymore, but 50 or 60 hours a week. Or also we observed that people were commonly bringing in additional adults to help pay the bills within the housing unit. Those might have been family members, but they might have been unrelated individuals where you maybe just rented a room in your house so that you could get more income to pay the bills.
Well, those are significant impacts. Your study keys in on households spending more than 30% of their income on rent. How did you choose that threshold?
Well, that threshold has been a focus of federal policy for quite a while. In fact, federal housing subsidies, whether they're in public housing or whether they're people are receiving housing choice vouchers, have focused on the fact that we don't want people who are low income to have to pay more than 30% of their income as rent. And the reason is there's been a series of studies that shows that when families spend more than 30% of their income as rent, that children don't do as well in school, that there are more health issues in and among the family members. And so that threshold has been a focus of federal policy for quite a while.
Even those who weren't classified as rent burdened reported making consumption cutbacks in the 2 years prior to your survey. Did that surprise you?
It surprised me to some extent, but I think what it showed in ways that we had not ascertained previously was that what a lot of families are doing is they're making this combination of consumption cutbacks and also these functional adjustments just to maximize the potential of how much income they can bring in. And so what we saw is that some families were bringing in additional individuals to help pay the rent, and then that actually made that combined household income such that that family was not rent burdened anymore. And so in that case, they were making some cutbacks on consumption and different things, or actually making these decisions to add additional adults to the house in order to maximize the well-being for their family. So it was this kind of complicated multiple set of decisions that households were making, and whether they were rent burdened or not, we observed that they were still making them. What we saw, though, is that if households were paying more than 30% of their income as rent or 50% of their income as rent, they were much more likely to be making these cutbacks and to be making them for a much longer time. So we saw some people making cutbacks for 5+ years. So those are most likely to be among people who are paying 30, 40, 50, 60% of their income as rent.
We're talking with Professor Gary Painter, a professor of real estate at the University of Cincinnati, and we're talking about a study into lack of affordable housing and the effect it has on renters. Homelessness is often seen as an effect of joblessness, but your research seems to suggest that housing affordability is a significant driver to homelessness. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I mean, it's kind of hard to talk about housing affordability without talking about both how much do you pay for rent and how much income do you have. So you could pay $3,000, $4,000 a month in rent, and if your income is $200,000 a year, then you can afford that rent. The problem is that people who have been earning kind of the median income in an area for a long time, those incomes have been pretty flat over a long time, while rents have been marching steadily upward. And so what we see in a city like Los Angeles is that more and more people are simply not able to pay the rent anymore given their level of income. And therefore, we are seeing what we see in Los Angeles, for instance, is just a sharp rise in homelessness due to economic factors and not due to, you know, severe mental illness or addiction as the primary driver of first-time homelessness.
Some of these areas we're talking about have tremendous economic prosperity. It seems like it's sort of ironic, but the prosperity may be contributing to the housing affordability crisis. Am I right?
Of course, with anything where there's economic dynamics happening, we have to, you know, take a step back to kind of see, well, how did we get here? And you're right that a place like Los Angeles or San Francisco, Chicago, et cetera, are places that have robust economic growth in a lot of different sectors of the economy. And there are people who are, you know, quite wealthy in these places. But it's certainly true in West Coast cities that we have simply not built enough housing to keep up with population growth. So as an economy is thriving, as jobs are booming, then people want to live there. And if people want to live there and we don't build any additional housing, the only thing that can happen is that prices of those rents or people who are wanting to own homes are going to go up. And what we've seen is that those home prices and rents are going up faster than people's incomes. And so in some sense, perhaps we're not thriving enough in a place like Los Angeles. Otherwise, people's incomes would be able to keep up with the rents.
Are there any proactive measures or solutions you'd suggest to policymakers to address the issue of housing affordability?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to make sure that we're building sufficient housing to meet the population in areas. And there's just way too many places, especially in large cities on the West Coast, that have for decades simply not built enough housing. So that's first and foremost. Secondly, we have to think about considering how we can subsidize extremely low-income individuals in ways outside of federal programs. Federal programs are targeted to make sure that people pay less than 30% of their income as rent, specifically for families. And in those cases, the problem there is that there's just insufficient funding for all the people who have needs. So if you're in a place like Los Angeles, only 1 in 5 families that qualify for this assistance actually receive it. And so if we're trying to prevent homelessness, we have to really focus on those people who are on the waiting list, and specifically those people who are paying more than 50 or 60% of their income as rent. It's this group of people who are, in many ways, as we saw in the study, kind of one expense away from not being able to pay the rent. What we found in our study is that if someone had a $400 emergency expense, we found that 22.75% of the sample simply could not cover that. They would not be able to pay the rent, and then, you know, they may face eviction.
Gary Painter, professor of real estate at the University of Cincinnati, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks of Chicago.
Wendy's new breakfast 2 for $3 Biggie Bundles let you create your own delicious combo. Choose from a sausage biscuit, egg and cheese biscuit, small seasoned potatoes, and a medium hot coffee. But it's obvious which combo's the best. Sausage biscuit and small seasoned potatoes. Well, maybe it's the fresh cracked egg and cheese biscuit with a medium hot coffee. Or 2 savory sausage biscuits. Whichever you pick, you can't go wrong. Choose wisely. Choose Wendy's new 2 for $3 Biggie Bundles.
Limited time only. U.S. price and participation may vary. Not valid in a combo. Single item at regular price.
What's for dinner? Burgers?
After last week, no thanks.
Avoiding foods due to fear of diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools? It may not be just stomach issues. It could be EPI, or exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. EPI can cause uncomfortable symptoms because it's a condition where the pancreas doesn't release enough digestive enzymes to break down food. But EPI can be managed. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor about your symptoms. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
It's a tragic statistic. The suicide rate of military veterans is about twice that of the general population. What are the factors behind this, and what can be done? InfoTrack's Roy Mackey is back with the story. Roy?
Thanks again, Chris. Our guest is Jim Lorraine, president of America's Warrior Partnership. Jim is also a U.S. Air Force combat nurse veteran, and he's here to talk about veteran suicides and how friends and family can take action to prevent them. Jim, I recently read a statistic that claimed that many more veterans have died from suicide in the past 20 years than active military members who died in combat in those wartime years. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. Tragic. You're absolutely right, Roy.
How does the veteran suicide rate compare to the general population?
Depends on the study that you look at, but on average, the veterans take their life at almost twice the rate of those who never served in the military.
Your organization, America's Warrior Partnership, has a program called Operation Deep Dive, which aims to prevent veteran suicides. Tell us a bit about Operation Deep Dive.
Operation Deep Dive came out of our experience of recognizing that the majority of veterans who were taking their life weren't connected to existing services. 40 to 60% of the veterans who take their life aren't enrolled in the VA for health care or any services. So what we wanted to do was to identify by community the veteran who had the highest risk factors for taking their life. And so what Operation Deep Dive seeks to do is really characterize the veteran who's at greatest risk within a community. And what we know is that the community is different. The state of Massachusetts, the veteran who's taking their life more often is very different than the veteran who's in Florida or the veteran who's in Montana. And so we sought to recognize that there was a difference, develop strategies that could address local issues. We call it getting upstream from the suicide.
You mentioned enrolling in services. What are some of the biggest challenges and barriers that do prevent veterans from enrolling in these services that are available?
Number one is the lack of awareness. Many veterans don't realize that they're eligible. It's not really an easy or an intuitive system to navigate. You know, it's, did you serve in a certain capacity? Did you serve overseas? What was your age? What was your National Guard or Reserve affiliation? So for many veterans, it's confusing on whether they're even eligible or not. And I think the other problem is that there are so many stories out there that people say, I'm just not going to do it. But it's important. Veterans have earned that right. What we look to do is America's Warrior Partnership is connect them to services that they need. Healthcare is a big one. You know, one of the things that we, in our work with America's Warrior Partnership Network, we serve veterans all over the country. And a lot of the times, financial insecurity, especially this day and age, was causing a lot of stress and a lot of despair. And when we drill into what was the root cause, a lot of the times it's veterans who had gotten sick and had to pay for their own health care, and so now they were deeper in debt. We look at it and say, you were eligible for VA health care, we should have gotten you in, and let's get you in now so you don't have to pay for your care and you can receive best in class if you can.
What are some of the signs and risk factors that may be red flags that a veteran may be struggling with suicidal thoughts and behaviors?
Some of the red flags are hopelessness, financial insecurity. Everyone points to like a mental health diagnosis. What we find is it's not just depression. It's not just post-traumatic stress disorder. We say that it's a combination of issues. It's post-traumatic stress coupled with underemployment, coupled with irregular housing, coupled with lack of access to transportation. It's not just one. The biggest thing is if veterans feel like, or families of veterans feel like the veterans isolating themselves, that's when you really need to start to reach out. Reach out and say, hey, are you okay? And when you do, if you need help, reach out and say, hey, there's the Veteran Crisis Line, which is 988, that dial one, and other resources that are out there to help. Families aren't alone. There's a lot of resources that can help. America's Warrior Partnership at americaswarriorpartnership.org can help navigate that system too.
Jim, do you have any final words for veterans who may be reluctant to ask for help and they just want to tough it out on their own?
Yeah, don't try to toughen out on your own. You know, as a nurse, but as a career military, I would say it doesn't get better with time. And if you need help, ask for help. It's easy. You know, when you were in the military, you had a first sergeant or you had somebody who had your back and connected you to resources that you needed. Don't be afraid to ask for help. It's okay.
Jim Lorraine, president of America's Warrior Partnership. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Roy.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
And that's it for this week's show. Our internet services are provided by Pear Networks. InfoTrack's executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Whitting. We hope you'll join us right here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
The Valley's fun music.
Lots and lots of fun.
All day long.
105.7 CFW.
This is 105.7 CFW.
Bye.
want that.
Fun music for Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, and Union. This is 105.7 CFW. We'll be right back. This is 105.7 CFW. CFW.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mostly sunny to partly cloudy sky today. Light north to northwest wind under 10 miles per hour. The high 56. Tonight, partly cloudy skies dropping to 39. On Monday, a mix of clouds and sunshine. 54 degrees by late afternoon. More sunshine returning Tuesday. Currently 44 degrees. CFW.
I pick it up like a car. I'ma hit it, I'ma hit it, that box onto it until tomorrow, yeah.
Shorty, I can see that you got so much energy.
The way you're twirling up them hips round and round.
There's no reason at all why you can't leave here with me.
In the meantime, stay, let me watch you break it down. And
damn, gonna be okay.
To find a station with our